Good morning and welcome to this EG session on Is UK Real Estate Still a Good Investment? My name's Damien Wild and I'm editor of EG. Were many of you here for Antonio Horta Soria this morning? Quick show of hands. Okay, I don't know what you felt about it, but I went from feeling bleak to mildly optimistic to a state of utter despair. There's some nodding out there, but I've been fighting it since, and I'm sure in 45 minutes' time we'll be back beyond mild optimism and way up the chart. Because it doesn't, whatever his assessment of the world economy and the UK's place in it, it doesn't necessarily mean UK's real estate investment prospects are diminished, of course. It does mean we have to think differently, though, and it does mean we have to be alive to what appears to be a riskier environment. Fortunately, we have an expert panel to guide us to the opportunities, who I hope are as smiley in person as they are in their photos behind, which are all extremely smiley. They're checking now. So closest to me is Patrick Smith, Investment Director of Frogmore. Next to him is Linda Shillaw, Chief Executive of Manchester Airports Group Property. Then we have Roger Marsh, Chair of Leeds City Region's Enterprise Partnership. Sir Richard Leese is Leader of Manchester City Council. Neil Robinson is Director of Global Communications at ABP London, replacing John Mew, who is stuck in traffic, but is every bit as smiley. And then at the end is Tom Leahy, Senior Director of EMEA Analytics at Real Capital Analytics. Before we get down to the discussion for the next 45 minutes or so, we've got two quick presentations. In a moment, I'll ask my colleague, Graham Sean from EG, to take us through a quick presentation on recent investment volumes and underlying factors. But first, I'd like to welcome Susan Cordwell, MD for Strategic Relationships and Performance for International Trade and Investment at the Department for International Trade, to say a few words. Susan.
Great, thank you. And thank you for inviting me to make a few brief comments before our esteemed panel can share their views on the debate at hand. I wanted to talk very briefly about the role of the Department of International Trade in UK real estate. And the mission of our department is to secure UK and global prosperity by promoting international trade and investment and championing free trade. So we promote the whole of the UK as an attractive destination to invest across all sectors, not just UK real estate. We work closely with international businesses, large and small, to come to the UK to invest, to grow, to export from here, as well as to investors. And the UK does have a strong pitch. We're the fifth, Antonio Horta said this morning, we are currently the fifth largest economy in the world. We have a competitive tax environment. We have world-class access to talent and skills, world-leading universities, research and development, fantastic IP, and fantastic growth in startups. And we want it to be easy to do business here, including having transparent planning rules, good regulatory environment, and rule of law that can protect the investor. So these fundamental reasons are why investors look to the UK, and they remain strong. So some of you might have heard from our minister yesterday about the importance of housing and real estate to government and regeneration of areas across the UK to build places where people want to live, to work, to socialise, and that we can attract talent, businesses and jobs. So public sector funding alone cannot pay for the scale of government's ambition for the revitalisation of our towns and cities and creation of new places. The capital investment team, one of my teams in the Department for International Trade, promotes the UK property sector and infrastructure development opportunities within its portfolio to try to attract global capital into the UK. Through our global network of overseas embassies and missions, we're able to promote the UK to a wide range of potential investors and will continue to do so. Some of those investors might be looking at the UK for the first time. So we want to ensure we're promoting the whole of the UK and shine a light on the fantastic opportunities across the country to those investors who may not yet have sufficient confidence or relationships outside of London. I'm delighted to see that many of the panel members represent many organisations whom we've already worked with successfully. For example, supporting investment into Airport City at Manchester Airport, the Thorpe Park development in Leeds, and in London, investment into Royal Albert Docks, which has remained little used since the docks closed commercially in the 80s. So the question for the debate, the fundamental reasons why investors look to the UK and the conversations that we're having, it remains strong, and the government is investing in maintaining this position. We continue in our dialogue to see interest, global investor interest in the UK property market, including from China, despite being impacted by increased capital controls. But if you're thinking about how to get investment into your property development, we encourage you to think about how well known your offer is to this audience and its readiness for investment. And we're here to help you promote those projects to that international audience, to investors who are looking at the UK for the first time. So please come and talk to us. But my team are only part of that small story, and I'm interested in listening to the panel debate today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Susan. Good morning, everyone. My role here is to give a bit of a statistical background to add to the underlying factors for why UK is a good place for real estate investment that has been mentioned by Susan just now. So to crack on with this, just to speed things along so the panel can get their teeth into their own views, what I'm going to talk about today statistically is polarisation and diversification. First of all, looking at polarisation by way of a couple of case studies on UK real estate investment by sector. First of all, looking at the offices sector in terms of investment in billion over the last 10 years. We see the statistics there on overall investment over the last 12 months, a 7% increase on the previous 12, but that coming despite a drop in overall transactional volume. So what we at EG Analytics kind of put that down to is the impact of those kind of top line deals, those real headline assets that can command headline rent, and those headline grabbers as well, the Cheese Grater and Brindley Place, just to name a couple of those. And obviously the environment around UK offices is changing slightly, looking at the occupational side of things, which we've done for the UK Cities Investor Guide, looking at change in take-up H1 2017 against H1 2016. 9 out of the 14 individual cities that we looked at saw a drop in overall take-up, so the kind of occupational side of things is being slightly impacted, even though Q3 stats suggest a little bit of a rise again. So 11% down year-on-year overall, but if we look at headline rents in the same time period, those kind of top-line assets that can command those types of rental levels, 5 out of the 14 individual cities saw an uplift, and the rest remained steady. So we think in terms of deployment of capital, they're going to be focused on those headline assets in the office environment. Now, looking at industrial sector as a little bit of a kind of, the other side of the polarization debate, the industrial investment actually is very interesting. It's dipped overall year on year, but transactional volumes have actually increased. So it's the complete opposite statistically to what we've seen in the offices sector. And we put that down to a lot of investors looking at the development or the refurbishment opportunities within the industrial environment. We know that there's a bit of a kind of stock shortage in industrial property across the UK. And so that, again, might be the focus for industrial investors moving forward. But there's certainly opportunities within this environment. Average rents for industrial spaces across the UK have increased over the past year. And the RICS opinion survey suggests that that's going to continue into the short and medium term as well. So it'll be interesting to see that how that graph kind of progresses over the next couple of years. So just to talk really briefly about diversification before I hand over to the panel, who I'm sure are chomping at the bit by now. We know that there's a lot of kind of opportunities in alternative assets. So I'm just going to put up a few of our news headlines, which have looked at perhaps what you'd call traditional commercial investors looking at the PRS sector, something obviously has been mentioned a lot yesterday and across MIPIM UK as somewhere where they're looking to grow and perhaps diversify their portfolio. So again, as we talk about kind of is the UK good for investment prospects in real estate, PRS is certainly worth factoring into the debate as well. On that note, I'll hand back to Damien and the panel for their insights. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, Graham. So we have our panel is the size of a six-a-side football team, and I think we'll make a quick substitution because John's here. Neil, you can take the second half off now. Okay, so an interesting story, as Graham said, of polarisation and diversification there. I'd like to see whether the panel recognised that, really, around that headline question. And I was very relieved to see that Leeds and Manchester both had upward arrows there on that first slide as well. But Patrick, starting with you, is the UK still a good investment? And do you recognise the points that Graham was making there?
Yes. I think there are some very real short-term risks as we head into all the uncertainty that we're getting in the political sphere. But I think the medium to long-term outlook looks really good. We've got a very stable economy that's not growing quite as quickly as I'm sure we'd all like, but at least we're not looking at recession. And there are some really good fundamentals around land supply that mean that the occupational market should, in the long term, respond. I think there are just a lot of short-term risks, which we personally are very nervous about.
Okay, do you see any areas of comfort?
Any areas of?
Of comfort.
Yeah, I think there's some big demographic changes. We've been looking at retirement. And again, the ageing population has been something that, again, has been a theme through some of the other speakers at different other sessions. So that's one risk, one area of the market that is probably pretty Brexit resilient. The other area is obviously industrials. We've seen a massive uptick, as the slides just showed, in terms of capital going into industrial markets. So that's very strong. The occupier base is, again, they're changing their logistic patterns around e-commerce. So again, the occupiers are responding very well, which means that it attracts capital that wants to take advantage of that. So industrials and some of the alternative markets are probably the two outliers.
Okay, thank you. Linda, is the UK still a good investment prospect? And if so, where?
Yes, I think it is. And we as a business are investing not just in the real estate part of the business, My World, through a 50% stake in the Airport City joint venture, but also Manchester Airport Group as a business is investing in its airports. So alongside the Airport City development run over the next 10 years, we're going to invest about £1 billion to bring forward a mixed-use scheme. Manchester Airport itself is investing a similar amount of money in its infrastructure and terminals, runways, taxiways, all around the airport. I think there's an important point as well that I think where the regional cities are concerned, investors do still find them attractive and are actually investors who may not traditionally have invested in regional cities are now starting to look there for value. You're seeing quite a lot of yield compression in France and Germany. UK is really good value for money. And actually those flows are heading not just traditionally to London as they have done traditionally. They're starting to come into regional cities. At Airport City, we sold the development site, which provided lots of logistics and warehousing to TPG, who've also recently bought Arlington Business Parks from Goodman, so US money coming in. And you've also got businesses like Aviva, who are putting significant investment into cities like Manchester. They see them as real targets for growth. So I'm an optimist on this. We're putting our own cash in, but we're actually seeing flows coming in from UK investors and non-UK investors.
So domestic and international as well. And Roger, what particular? I know I've got an idea which region you will say offers a great opportunity for inward investment, but which sectors within UK regions you see as good bets?
I think there's two important points that I'd like to preface my remarks. First of all, I think it's incumbent of us in these uncertain times to talk UK PLC up as a whole. I think secondly, and sitting from my northern vantage point next to Sir Richard from Manchester, the other side of the Pennines, that regions like the north as a whole and the component parts, we should be making more of them being seen as part of our national financial solution than a problem. And so coming to regions like Leeds City Region, which has a lot of complementary as well as unique aspects to its economy, and we were only talking earlier, Richard and I, about how to make sure that we create the right environment where there's healthy competition but really meaningful collaboration rather than it's just a token thing, such that we make a virtue of, for example, the Independent Economic Review that looked at the Northern Powerhouse around our four prime capabilities and actually exploit the value of difference rather than try to compete on things where actually we should be making. So, for example, Leeds City Region, if there's some strength in a part of the north or the Midlands that's advantageous for UK PLC, we should be part of that promotive narrative and vice versa. Because actually the the recent sign and innovation audits that the government has been conducting has started to give real substance to our economic strengths in the reindustrialized activities that are global, you know, that are really world leading. If I take an example, and Patrick touched on an aging population, one of the things about an aging population, about housing and care, is about mobility. If you think about some of our strengths as in the UK, particularly where I come from, in terms of how to keep people mobile, artificial hips, knees, joints, bionic hands and all the rest of it, actually, they're of global significance. And we need to build on that and be very clear about a few things that are world-leading, where we can healthily compete, but importantly for me, meaningful collaborate, not only for Northern, but national advantage.
Okay, thank you. And Sir Richard, Roger talked there about it's incumbent upon us to talk up UK PLC. Is the government doing enough to advance the cause for real estate investment nationally? I'm thinking about transport in the north, in the northwest particularly.
Well, first of all, I want to echo something that Roger said, is that the interest of UK PLC has got to have strong cities that are working in collaboration. I'm wearing a lanyard that says Manchester and Liverpool on it, which might not have happened 10 years ago, but that will be normal now. And similarly, we have really close working relationships with Leeds, with Sheffield, with colleagues in Newcastle, and we see that as making a stronger whole by working together, and we'll continue to do so. If I was to focus on the Manchester part of that equation, where at the moment demand across all sectors is absolutely enormous. Last year was a record for office take-up. This year we're going to have twice as many housing completions as we had the year before, and that is on an upward trajectory. I think the question is, particularly in uncertain times, is what is happening now that is likely to maintain that demand going forward into the future. And I think a few examples of things that can give us confidence, but will also depend to a certain extent on government support. Today in Manchester, there's a topping out ceremony for the Graphene Engineering Innovation Centre. I'd pick that because it's an example of something that is at the cutting edge of advanced materials, where advanced manufacturing is going to go in the future, and the fact that we have investments of that sort taking place means that we will be able to maintain a prominent position, in particular industrial sectors that will continue to promote growth. Linda's already talked about the Manchester Transformation Programme, £1 billion investment. City Council certainly has some confidence because I think we just agreed earlier this week to invest £125 million in that. So, but again, that will help drive growth. Other aspects of infrastructure which will drive growth across the north are High Speed 2, Northern Hub and Northern Powerhouse Rail. At the moment, we are making progress on those. They absolutely need government support, and government needs to make that investment in infrastructure. But I think it's also fair to say that the North is having to fight every inch of the way to get those investments delivered as well. But in terms of confidence for investors, we will continue to fight every inch of the way, and we will get that investment delivered. And it is those sorts of things that say there is a really strong long-term future for northern cities, and a future for northern cities where we will narrow the productivity gap with London and the South East, so we will contribute more to a bigger share to UK PLC. Also says for investors that in terms of a medium to long-term bet, the north of England is really the place to be.
So going back to the second part of my question, if the government were to offer more infrastructure support, that would enable you to offer better returns for investors?
At the moment, on a pan-northern level, Transport for the North is just finalising the transport plan for the north of England. That is the investment we're going to need over a 30-year period of time, and that will require government support to deliver that. So, but we are making progress on that. Transport for the North is becoming the first subnational a statutory transport body. We're making progress. As long as we continue to make progress and government continues to support that, then there is a very strong future.
Okay, thank you. John, you're an investor into the UK in East London. Do you feel every bit as confident about the UK's investment prospects as you did when you made the decision a few years ago?
Is it working?
Yeah.
First, I apologize, everybody. I'm running a bit late this morning. I can't beat the London traffic. Let me introduce about ABP. ABP is a Chinese developer who come to the UK market since 2010. We spent a bit of time to study at the market, and we chosen. We chosen London, we chosen UK for many reasons. One of the most important reasons, we see UK as a very stable ground for investment, most important on real estate, and compared to other part of the world like US and Australia. And we committed our development in Royal Albert Dock in East London of somewhat £1.9 billion as a major project into East London. And even today, we feel that the market is very strong, and the real estate market in UK remains strong despite Brexit last year. We actually see the trend from Asia investment into UK remain very strong as well. Over the last year, we can see it's more than double in terms compared to the figure to 2016. It's £1.9 billion invested into UK. Just from the Asia alone, and out of which is about one third is it from Hong Kong. Surprisingly, still remain is only about 5% from China. But investment into UK market is very strong from Asia still, despite Brexit. And I can also see that the trend that changing from a more stable return is going to invest into commercial buildings rather than traditional residential, as the yield is going down, and also investors are very clever in terms of making sure their return in the time of political uncertainty. And they're actually seeking for different type of investment in real estate. And I see more and more trend actually now investing into commercial building. The reason that we chosen East London, we always believe East London is our first step into the UK market. East London is the only place that London can grow at this moment in time, where you've got some space and where you've got all the future tenants, our new blood for London, are in. And we chosen East London for all that good reason. And the proof is you can see that East London price has been appreciated and more people moving into East London. And we got a lot of foreign residents now in East London area. And also among with the investor that I look at the figure last night before I come to this meeting is at the moment investment from the Far East is more than 20% into UK are gone into East London, not Westminster, Leicester, but East London. And you can see the trend that investment into UK, not only that Brexit did not affect it, it is actually been double in terms of appetite, but it does change the appetite in terms of what they're investing into the real estate market. But we can also see the trend that is going to East London. Obviously, other places like Manchester, Liverpool, Leeds, Birmingham, due to HS2, they also create some kind of attention in the fast market. But foreign investor, they go for a safe investment and good return, and this is what they're looking for. London is still the place for them to come at the first step, but they will move on to other areas.
Okay. We'll come back to moving beyond. But Tom, Linda talked about that growing interest in the UK relative to some other markets which are getting expensive. John talked about that interest from Asia. Are the numbers that you look at telling a similar story, that international investors' confidence in UK real estate isn't diminished?
So I think the question that we're all here to answer today, is the UK still an attractive investment? I guess the elephant in the room is, would we have been asking that 24 months ago when the UK was the number one market in Europe for cross-border money coming in from the US, from Asia, from the Middle East, and also from continental Europe? There is undoubtedly, despite some of the very big headline deals that have happened, there's undoubtedly been a slowdown in money coming into the UK. Now, some of that, you can definitely say, is price-driven. Some of the big US opportunistic funds, they've now seen yields compress significantly in the UK and they're looking elsewhere. Someone like Finland, for example, has seen a lot of money going into this year, price-driven largely, because they see a recovery in prices there that has already happened in the UK. But, you know, if you look at investment volume since last year, they've fallen between 30 and 40% across the UK. In terms of that split with London versus the regions, London is still a very, very attractive market on a global basis. It's not really, I guess, that, you know, the guys representing Leeds and Manchester and the other regional cities would like to see themselves competing with London for some of that capital. But I think realistically, the investors who are placing their capital in London, they're looking at placing it in London or Paris or Frankfurt or New York or Seoul or Shanghai. Investment into the regional markets, it has slowed, but there's strong interest from German players, for example. So we're seeing, for those who are here at the previous panel, there's strong interest from German players investing in Edinburgh. I think the problem in some of the regional markets is the lot sizes. So we did some research. There's been over 600 deals take place in London for offices worth over £100 million. In the rest of the UK, that number's less than 40. So if you're a big international investor with a lot of money to spend, because there's a lot of capital allocated to property at the moment, it's easier to spend it in London or in some of the other big European markets than building up a portfolio on a more piecemeal basis, you know, buying 50 million offices in Leeds or Manchester or Newcastle or Birmingham.
So, Richard, I think I detected a shake of the head there when Tom talked about the competitive set that you're looking at.
Cities like Manchester and Leeds competing with London. And I think we recognised a long, long time ago that in this space we don't compete with London simply because the scale issues are completely different. So I think we're looking at it from another perspective, and is are we capable in Manchester or one of the other northern cities of attracting sufficient investment to meet our development needs? And the answer at the moment is that we very clearly can meet sufficient investment to meet our development needs, and some of that comes from overseas. We have very significant Chinese investors, Beijing Construction Engineering Group, Far East Consortium, and so investing in the city. I think what is slightly different for Manchester is that that sort of speculative capital that you were talking about is less likely to come to Manchester. It is more likely to be investors that have a long-term interest in investing in the place. And from our point of view, those are better investors to have because they have an interest in growing the place than those that are just there for a quick buck.
Okay, and Linda, I've heard you use an interesting phrase around this on platforms like this about you would rather have London on your side than on someone else's side.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And to just echo what Sir Richard said, I mean, I've spent most of my career as an investor, developer, occupier in the UK.
Sorry, Linda, I think your microphone's...
They're gone.
Gone.
Take it off now. I spent most of my own. Yeah? Oh, gosh. Right, okay, I'm not known for being quiet, so this is probably the worst thing to give me. I've spent most of my career as an investor, developer, and occupier in the UK, and I think... just leave it. Yeah, so I'm tangled up. I'll do it in a minute. And to echo what Richard said, I mean, I'm a big fan of the regional cities in the UK. The UK actually has a lot of very strong businesses and business sectors, both existing and new. And those businesses actually don't stand still. They do grow and expand. And a lot of the demand that we see in our current development is coming from businesses that are fast growing. And they're occupiers who want to not just build space to grow their business in today but actually and into the future, but actually they want to own that space as well. So from my perspective, you know, the northern cities or the cities that are not London actually all have something that is unique. They have deep skill pools, they have, you know, sort of deep talent pools that are attractive to occupiers and investors follow the occupiers. I think the UK would be a lot weaker without the global city that is London. But I also think it's really important to make sure that we get the connectivity between London and all the northern cities from a capacity and a speed perspective improved, but even more fundamentally that we actually sort of get the connectivity between the northern cities and the regions around them improved. So, you know, we'd be weaker without London. We're not competing with London. I'm a big fan of regional cities as an investor. So.
Okay, there was an interesting point in that. So are you saying that investment in transport infrastructure particularly is the number one requirement to ensure the UK stays a good investment?
I think it's really key because, you know, sort of, again, having lived and worked in many cities sort of around the UK, if you're an occupier, say, so with an occupier hat on, what would drive me to make a decision as to where I was going to consolidate or bring my business, build a new office? It's generally access to skills. So the access to skills, northern cities have fantastic universities, often world-leading in some aspects of what they do. So there are deep skill pools there. The next thing as an occupier that you look at is how do I get them to where I'm going to sort of build my facility. So connectivity is really important, and it's not just city to city or connecting northern cities to London, it's actually global connectivity as well. So if you take Manchester, you know, the airport's experienced phenomenal growth over the last decade, and for every direct route that we put on, you know, we're adding 50 million a year at least to the northern economy. So, and actually we see trade double normally where we put, so the routes that have gone into Hong Kong and Beijing, you know, we've doubled the amount of trade as a region that we actually do with China, because you've got a lot of sort of backwards and forwards traffic between Manchester, the north, and China. We've linked the airport. We're now directly flying to the west coast of the US. The tech business in these northern cities is thriving. You know, so the reality of it is connectivity is critical, but it's not just about, you know, we can put air routes on to, you know, sort of a gazillion different places, but actually we need to be able to move people around the conurbation as well. And it is absolutely critical. You know, the northern business leaders are absolutely behind the sort of civic business leaders here in pushing for the investment from the government on this.
Okay, thank you. And Roger, in Leeds, to maintain strong real estate investment opportunities, what's the key, whether it comes from government, whether it comes regionally, or whether it comes from this sector?
I don't want to repeat what others have said, but actually to support what they have said, and to re-emphasise my point in terms of our national wealth going forward. For our kids and our grandkids, recognising where we are, is that I genuinely believe that outside, whilst London is very important, will continue to be very important, that actually the regions, the North, the West Midlands, etc., are part of a solution in the long term. But for that solution to be fully realised, we need to understand the difference between what we're asking for through things like transport for the North, and it's not a begging bull. It's actually a huge offer to the UK. We're asking for 21st century infrastructure that connects us. I call my three I's, internationally, intercity, and intra-region, to unlock and support and enable that growth to take place that in the previous Industrial Revolution was part of driving the whole economy. So it, rather than being a begging bowl, it should be understood as a must-have to the UK's whole future. Secondly, and importantly, that we do need to build on the knowledge-based economies that are emerging in and beyond London, and recognise that for investors, you can perhaps put a big chunk of money to work easily, but get perhaps flat relative to other places' returns. Perhaps not the yields that you might get by investing perhaps in a portfolio of things over time. And as I said, I don't want to repeat what Linda and Richard have said, but this isn't about being kind to the North or the Midlands. It's recognising the huge untapped economic potential. And we're beginning to see it. You know, for example, a few northern cities are now becoming a brain drain for graduates. You know, they're coming to learn, stay, and now we're attracting people up from the capital where actually it's a simple offer. We can pay you less, but you can live a better life and you can buy a home. And actually for 30 pluses, it's quite an attractive thing if we can show them that they're the right opportunities for them for the future.
Okay, are there any questions out there from the audience? We have got a microphone that will find you. There's one just down here. I'll ask Patrick a question while the microphone can find you. Have we got another microphone? It's just coming down there. Patrick, Tom's point about the elephant in the room being the fact that we wouldn't have asked this question 24 months ago. Is it because of Brexit or is it cyclical and we'd be having this session anyway?
It's been a much longer cycle than I think anyone would normally have predicted. But a lot of that is to do with low interest rates and low inflation that is kind of creating this problem. We've had huge injections of quantitative easing into all of the major developed markets, and that is changing the basis of how people are investing. The main point I wanted to pick up on earlier is I think we have to be really careful about when we talk about the different markets, because the prime markets and the core markets are behaving very differently to the secondary markets. And yes, you know, prime is definitely well above its pre-crash levels. But secondary and some of the regional pricing, there are much more opportunities and you can invest. That's why a lot of overseas capital will look towards the regions, because it can get a slightly higher yield for similar quality real estate. The opportunities for us is more in the secondary markets, where you have this inbuilt obsolescence that is a wonderful thing of real estate. And actually moving real estate and transitioning it, so you buy secondary, you buy unloved broken assets, and then move them through into core for longer term investors that want to hold real estate for its income, is kind of what the game should be. And that's certainly what we focus on. So the elephant in the room is dealing with this short-term transition in terms of, as we go through all this political unrest and upheaval, you know, my career, we're in uncharted territory. You know, it's very difficult to predict what's going to go on. But the fundamentals behind the UK are really strong, and that will win through. It's just, you know, taking advantage, if you like, of this short-term volatility to invest capital wisely. And it's this global pursuit of income which is driving a lot of these overseas investors into the UK, and London in particular.
Okay, thank you, John, and then I'll come down the front.
I want to bring to the attention about the idea of how UK in this global market in direct competition with the rest. Don't forget, this is an investment market, so investors to choose where their money is going to go. And listen to all the leaders down here. UK, how UK is able to compete regional and country to country, I think is one of the most important points. It is not about different region, not London, not Manchester, not Leeds, not Birmingham. It is how UK look from the perspective of a foreign investor. Of course, there's a special thing about London. There's also a special thing about Manchester, Leeds, and different area in this country. But we are talking about the country alone. But one thing I want to put it up in here is, in order for UK to keep up with the competition, I would see there maybe require some radical thinking. Because it's at the moment, how I see with my experience in the development world in the country is things are too organic. And the developer not necessarily quite working in good relationship with the government as well, national or local government, to actually promote the UK real estate market as a whole. And what we do in ABP, for example, we have to take up some of the job that not like a normal developer, just look at our appraisal and how much we can get rent, and therefore our yield is. We have to actually, in order to make our development to be more successful, but in the actual long-term benefit of the government, because of tax and all that reason, we have to do more. We have to do more radical. We have to provide more hand-holding, provide more services for our customer. And for example, in here, I've got seen many friends here. My dear colleague, Mr. John from CITIC. CITIC Group is one of the biggest companies in China. But through our developments, we managed to bring all these companies able to come in to invest, not necessarily just in the real estate market, but also into UK itself. Now, these are the actual things. Public and private partnership, I don't think is quite working. Because it's at the moment is when we do look for other projects in UK, Section 106 and all the other things, almost make it the development is not feasible. And talk about the infrastructure and all that, it's always a chicken and egg scenario. And we need to work together as private and public partnership to have a bigger picture, not just looking on the individual appraisal for an individual project. We have to look at bigger budget as well, and how local government, central government will gain working with a developer who committed to regenerate area. I think that will actually help and add more competitiveness to the UK real estate market.
Okay, sadly that will be a whole other session, our public-private partnerships working, but a question at the front.
Hi, I'm Oksana from Polaromax, a property developer. For us, the real elephant in the room is, would London keep its status as a financial hub of Europe? And if it doesn't, touch wood, places like East London would be probably the most vulnerable, given that it's all around Canary Wharf and employment and people working from all over the world. So if that does happen, which other industries do you think could take up this empty space? You did touch on tech, and it seems to be really thriving in the north, but are there any other industries that you think might be able to pick up the slack from this? And if there are, where would you say they're locating at the moment? So where would we look into diversifying? Okay, should that happen?
There's lots of elephants in the room today. Todd, do you see that in the numbers that you look at? Is that a consideration, the fact that London is losing its grip as a financial centre?
I think the potential is certainly there. If you look at the numbers that the banks are talking about relocating, they're still relatively small. You know, there's a big hoo-ha last week or the week before when I was at Expo Real in Munich because Goldman Sachs had taken some office space in Frankfurt. But the number of people they'd taken the office space for was something like 200. So this is not, I don't think we're necessarily looking at whole-scale relocations, but a piecemeal move away from London as people move maybe some aspects of their trading into the European Union to benefit from passporting rights. I think in terms of what might be replacing that, I mean, if you look at the take-up in London over the last 10 years, you know, finance, which was the big driver, has been replaced by technology firms, professional services, now serviced offices, some like WeWork has taken up a huge amount of space in London. But a certain amount of that feeds off the financial system that has grown up in London. So I think the risk around Brexit and if is some of that will be kind of denuded. So it's not just the banks, it's some of the fintech firms that are located in Old Street and Shoreditch and what have you, some of the professional services firms, the accountants, the lawyers, the insurers, who've all grown up around London as a financial sector, that might be eaten away at slowly but surely. I don't think it'll be a, you know, tomorrow you'll see Frankfurt as Europe's new financial centre, but I think the risk for London is that it would be a slow, gradual eating away of its current preeminence.
Roger already talked about the prime capabilities for the North that were identified in the Northern Independent Economic Review. So we don't see over the next 10, 15 years financial services as being a key driver of the economy of the North. We see digital industries as being a key driver, advanced manufacturing, particularly around advanced materials. We see energy and we see health innovation as being the key drivers. Financial services are required to support that, but they're not a driver in themselves. Now, all of those sectors where there are already internationally significant strengths in the north of England are less likely to be vulnerable to Brexit than a lot of other sectors. So as far as the market is concerned in the north of England, if we continue to grow on what our strengths are, is that we can actually still look forward to a pretty positive future, whatever the outcome of Brexit negotiations.
Okay, I've had the signal from the back, and that's a nice upbeat note to end on, and much more upbeat than my intro as well. So thank you for that. Thank you for your questions. Thank you all for coming. It's clearly going to be a highly no more relevant topic. I think there will be no more relevant topic, but please join me in thanking the panel.